Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now we continue our presidential election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Let others focus only on the horse race and the gaffes. We're exploring an issue a show for 30 shows between now and the election. You can see our 30 issues gallery at wnyc.org/issues and get the conversation going online in advance of some of the issues radio days. All our issues this week are on the theme of debt and taxes. And today we ask, is Simpson-Bowles the answer? We have two very special guests, Alice Rivlin, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, who was President Clinton's budget director and sat on the Simpson-Bowles Debt Commission and voted yes herself. She also co-chaired her own bipartisan commission with former Republican Senator Pete Domenici. And later we'll hear from Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, who was on Simpson-Bowles and voted no. But first, Alice Rivlin. Ms. Rivlin, thank you very much for coming on to do this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. Delighted to be here.
I'd like to start by establishing how serious a problem you think the national debt is. Yesterday, we had the liberal economist James Galbraith as one of our guests, and he said the whole problem is being exaggerated for political gain. And I want to get your reaction to what he says here in this 30-second clip about our $16 trillion national debt.
Well, that $16 trillion is a highly exaggerated number because a great part of that is held by the government itself. It doesn't really count for anything economically. The debt problem that we have has been, continues to be, the debt of the private sector, people's mortgages that they can't pay, and the burden of debt on companies and on households generally. The debt of the public sector exists because of the crisis. It's not a cause of anything, and it doesn't have it does not merit the hysteria that many people direct at it.
Economist James Galbraith on yesterday's show. Ms. Rivlin, how does your own take on the seriousness of the issue contrast with his?
Well, it contrasts quite a lot. I'm often on programs with Jamie Galbraith, respect him a lot, but we do differ. However, he's right that the debt is not an immediate problem, that we wouldn't have to get rid of it right away. We shouldn't. It is a long-term problem. What you see if you look at projections of the federal budget, and I don't think Galbraith would question this, over time, spending will rise faster than the economy can grow, and the revenues won't. So we'll have larger and larger debt in relation to the size of the economy. Now, most of that is because not of the current crisis, because we have an aging population and very expensive medical care whose cost is rising every day. That means that the big entitlement programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and to a lesser extent Social Security, are going to cost more and more every year. So we have to figure out what to do about that. We can't carry a larger and larger debt every year, looking down the road 5, 10, 20 years. So we have to do something about it. We can do that in the future. We can legislate now measures that will reduce the debt, both by raising taxes, raising revenues, and by reducing the rate of growth of entitlements gradually in the future. But we have to do that now, because the longer we wait, the harder it will be to do it. It's not incompatible with having additional debt right now to stimulate the economy, because it's growing much slower than anybody wants it to.
Explain that. How can you cut the debt and expand the debt for stimulus at the same time?
Well, because you're doing it in different years. So to make it simple, suppose right now we decided we would put in place some infrastructure spending that would employ more people and help the economy grow. That would spend out over the next several years. But at the same time, we would take steps to reform our tax code so that gradually tax revenues rise in the future, and to reduce the rate at which the entitlement spending is growing. Mostly that means making health care delivery more efficient so that the cost of health care per Medicare beneficiary doesn't go up so fast.
Is that the balance that you as an individual propose, or did Simpson Bowles also actually call for more stimulus kind of spending right now?
Simpson Bowles said that, and remember this was 2 years ago, that we should have more investment in future growth. They didn't specify exactly what that would be, and that we should not reduce the deficit too fast so as not to derail the recovery. In the bipartisan policy center endeavor that Pete Domenici and I chaired, we actually had an upfront stimulus and combined with our longer run deficit reduction. And we did it in the form of a full year payroll tax reduction. The Congress and the president picked up part of that, but not as big as we had recommended.
On the campaign trail, since, as you say, Medicare is such a big problem for the deficit going forward, the president and the Romney-Ryan ticket have their competing plans, as you know, to save money on Medicare. The president has a panel of experts to decide how to reimburse providers to save money. The Romney-Ryan approach says leave it to the market by having seniors buy policies from the marketplace and then let the market sniff out the inefficiencies. Do you think either is more effective in terms of deficit reduction? And did your anti-debt plan come close to approaching these differences?
In the Domenici-Rivlin plan, this is not in Simpson Bowles, in the Domenici-Rivlin plan, we said you need to do everything that's sensible that you can think of. The controls in the Affordable Care Act, sometimes called Obamacare, are directed at gradually reducing the rate of growth of Medicare spending by making it more efficient. As you said, they would have lots of experimentation and demonstrations of more effective way to deliver care, and have a panel called the Independent Payments Advisory Board put those into effect in Medicare, if not overruled by the Congress. What we said, that's a good idea. Let's keep that and allow people to stay in traditional Medicare if they want to, and hope that it gets more efficient. But we also said, let's try to have competition among private plans and traditional Medicare to see if we can't get these innovations put in place competitively and reduce the rate of growth of cost. So ours is kind of a hybrid plan. You can think of it as making Medicare Advantage more competitive, but it picks up some of the Ryan idea of premium support and competition on an exchange, and combines it with keeping traditional Medicare. That's a little complicated, but mm-hmm. I think the problem is not easy. And what we were saying is, let's try both approaches.
My guest is Alice Rivlin, former budget director for President Clinton. She co-chaired a deficit reduction commission privately with former Republican Senator Pete Domenici, and she was also on the president's Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Commission. She voted yes. We'll be getting another point of view later from Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who was on the commission and voted no on Simpson-Bowles. And I want to take a phone call for you from a listener who brings up one of Jan Schakowsky's objections to Simpson-Bowles. So let's let Antonios in Queens ask this question. Antonios, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I was calling. My question is, we're talking about federal debt reduction. And immediately with this conversation, we went from debt reduction to the reduction of so-called entitlement programs, programs that promote social welfare. By a large margin, the biggest expenditure the federal government has is military and defense spending. So my question is, if we're really looking to cut costs and balance the budget, why would we not look at the greatest and probably most wasteful expenditure the federal government has, which is military and defense spending.
Alice Rivlin, what do you say to Antonios?
I totally agree with Antonios, and we hadn't had a chance to say what, besides entitlement reform in the distant future, we would put in a plan. I agree that defense spending is larger than it need be going forward. And it's not a part of the long-run increase in the deficit because the wars are winding down. And if you look at the projections of defense spending, they won't go up very fast, not as fast as the economy can grow. So defense spending is not likely to be contributing to the future deficit. But I agree with Antonio. So
does Simpson-Bowles
spend it better?
Does Simpson-Bowles get serious, in your opinion, on Pentagon spending?
Yes, but not very specific. The trouble with being serious about defense spending, if you have to say exactly what the threats are going to be and what you would cut. But both Simpson-Bowles and more particularly Domenici Rivlin did hold defense spending at lower rate of growth than it has been.
Is the biggest obstacle to enacting Simpson-Bowles-style reform that Republicans will vote no on any tax hike, no matter how small?
Well, it depends on which Republicans you're talking about.
Well, those let's say a majority of the House of Representatives.
those who took the Grover Norquist pledge.
That's a majority of the House of Representatives.
Say that they will never vote for increasing revenues, even if tax rates go down. That promise is not tenable, so you're right. Unless Republicans and Democrats come together, and Republicans are willing to say we will raise more revenue in the future from a reformed tax system, a better tax system, we can do that. You know, we have a terrible tax system. And unless Democrats are willing to admit that the aging of the population and the rising cost of health care is a problem and we have to do something about the health care costs, we can't do anything about aging, we don't want to, unless both sides are willing to give something, and the defense budget is willing to give something as well, we can't get there. It's a question of spreading the sacrifice. It is not possible to balance the budget in the future or even stabilize the debt by spending cuts alone. We're going to need more revenue. I don't think it's possible to do it by revenue increases alone. When you talk to Jan Schakowsky, she offered a plan, but it was mostly tax increases with very few spending cuts. The bipartisan groups of which I've been a part both said we have to do some of each to control this problem in the long run.
You mentioned the Grover Norquist No New Taxes pledge. Bob Woodward's new book has a scene, at least as it was summarized in a Washington Examiner article that I read, where Alan Simpson tells Paul Ryan that he would be disappointed in him if he votes no on the commission report because of his Grover Norquist pledge. And Ryan says he has to vote no, but not because of Norquist, rather because the commission plan would have started taxing employer health benefits, which are tax-free now. Ryan reportedly said that would push millions of companies to drop their employee health plans, pushing most of those people into Obamacare, which would make the deficit worse. And Simpson said, that's a good answer. I sure will accept that answer. That's honest. All of that according to Bob Woodward's new book as written up in the Washington Examiner. Do you know if that encounter took place?
No, I don't. It might have. I think Ryan was I was disappointed in Paul Ryan. I have worked a good deal with Paul Ryan on Medicare reform, and I think he's got some good ideas there, although I don't agree with his position on the budget itself. But I was disappointed that Ryan, unlike some equally conservative senators, did not vote for the report. Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, who is very conservative, voted for the report, and he said something very important when he voted for it. He said, there's a lot here I don't like, and I think he probably meant the tax increases. But I've figured out that if we're going to solve this problem, Tom Coburn isn't going to get everything he wants. And that's the spirit in which this has to be approached. And Dick Durbin, also from Illinois, and I think just as liberal as Jan Schakowsky, also voted for the report. And he didn't make a similar kind of statement, but he must have thought the same thing. There's a lot here I don't like, but we've got to solve this problem. And it's got to be a bipartisan solution.
What do you think of the substance of Ryan's complaint in that case, that millions of people would be driven out of their employee health care plans, whether or not you like Obamacare? And I would throw in, why wouldn't taxing health benefits be a huge middle-class tax hike?
I actually think that we ought to tax all benefits, all income, including benefits, in the same way. What we do right now is to say, if you take your compensation in wages, you pay income tax on it. But if you take it in some other kind of benefit, health care, insurance, future pension, etc., then you don't pay taxes on it. And I think one of the consequences of that is people prefer to have the health insurance because it's not taxed. And the result of that is people get very rich benefits. Some people, especially upper income people, to avoid the tax, get rich benefits under their health plan so that everything is covered, not just necessary health expenditures. And that's one of the reasons, not the only one, that we have an incentive to spend so much on health care. It's all covered by your insurance plan, if you have a particularly good one, therefore, why not go see the doctor whenever you want to?
Alice Rivlin, my guest for another few minutes on WNYC, President Clinton's budget director at one point. She was a member of the Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Commission appointed by President Obama, and she co-chaired her own private sector deficit commission, deficit reduction commission, with former Republican Senator Pete Domenici. We will get another view on if Simpson-Bowles is the answer to the national debt from Illinois Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky coming up next. But 212-433-WNYC. Scott in Soho, you're on the air with Alice Rivlin. Hello, Scott.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Okay.
I was just curious, with her expertise, what percentage of government spending would have to be cut to really make an impact? Is it, you know, and I don't mean on the rate of growth. I mean in just general cuts in spending, like the private sector's had to do over the past couple of years, or home budgets. Is it 1%, 2%, 3%? I'm just curious.
Let me start to answer this myself, and Alice Rivlin, tell me if I'm going in the right direction to make this as clear as possible. And it brings up another of the reasons that Jan Schakowsky voted no, because Simpson-Bowles would cap government spending at 21% of the overall economy, which is less than it is right now, which she says is inadequate to deal with crises like the one we're in, where the private economy shrinks and government needs to temporarily spend more on stimulus and the safety net. So is that 21% figure the right way to enter an answer to Scott's question?
It is the answer in Simpson-Bowles, and I actually disagreed with it. I think we're going to have to spend a larger percentage than 21%, certainly for the next few years, to accommodate the growth of the aged population, this big avalanche of seniors, the baby boom generation retiring, and the growth of health care until we figure out how to slow it. So I think we're probably going to be up in the 22-23% of GDP for a while, and that means we're going to have higher tax rates. But
it sounds like such a small difference on the face of it.
Oh,
people may be hearing, oh, 21, 22, 23, that's all the same little range.
Well, I don't think it's an enormous difference, but when you start thinking about how you would get government spending down from where it is now, which is about 24%, some of that's temporary. It's related to the current crisis. And I certainly agree with Jan that when you're in a deep recession, you're going to have to spend more. You don't want to hold your spending artificially low and punish your economy in a recession. That would be crazy. But over the long run, the point is we have to have a debt which is not growing faster than our economy. And that means if you want your spending at 20%, then your revenues have to be at least 18. And I don't think we can keep the spending at 20. I think we're going to have to go higher than that and have higher revenues. I also think we can get there with a much better tax code and actually probably lower rates.
So that's a big thing. How hard did you have to swallow to vote yes on Simpson-Bowles, knowing that, for example, if I understood your critique just now correctly, if we're in a recession and the economy shrinks by 2%, while the senior population keeps growing, Medicare spending would actually go down under a Simpson-Bowles mandate. That must have been
I don't. I just didn't read Simpson-Bowles that way. I don't think they're capping spending in a recession. There's nothing in Simpson-Bowles that says that.
GDP growth plus 1% for Medicare? Didn't it say – tell me if I'm wrong. GDP growth plus 1% for Medicare?
Over the long run, yes. Yeah, over the long run, yes. But that's very different from saying you're going to cap total spending in a recession. There actually isn't any good way to do that. And Simpson-Bowles wasn't proposing it, it didn't even occur to me that they were. What they were saying is over the long run, we're pushing we want to hold spending to around 21% of the GDP. That's arguable. Is that too much or too little over the longer run? But they weren't saying it has to be that every year.
We've got 3 minutes left. Let me ask you to play fact checker on competing statements by Paul Ryan and the president. And then I want to ask you about your take on the political prospects for Simpson-Bowles Rivlin-Domenici-style compromise after the election. These statements are about how Obama has acted compared to past presidents in other countries in terms of his spending. Paul Ryan first.
By his own decisions, President Obama has added more debt than any other president before him, and more than all the troubled governments of Europe combined. One president, one term, $5 trillion in new debt.
Now, we took some emergency actions, but that accounts for about 10% of this increase in the deficit. And we have actually seen the federal government grow at a slower pace than at any time since Dwight Eisenhower. In fact, substantially lower than the federal government grew under either Ronald Reagan or George Bush.
So Ryan's claim that Obama added more debt than any previous president, and Obama's claim that he's growing government at a slower pace than any time since Eisenhower. Are they both true in their own ways?
They're both true in their own ways, but I wouldn't blame the increase in the debt on President Obama. Some of it is a result of actions taken by President Obama, for example, the stimulus, which I believe was very necessary and which was probably not big enough. It worked to preserve jobs. Most of the debt increase was because of the financial crisis, which happened on the last president's watch, and the fall off in revenues, tax rates going down, and tax revenues going down even faster because of the recession. That wasn't caused by President Obama. He arrived on the scene at almost the depths of the recession and has turned it around. So I don't think Paul Ryan's being fair here.
And on a political projection, if you would, I'll assume that everything gets scrambled and it's very hard to predict what would happen if Romney is elected. If the status quo is maintained after the election, Obama is president, Democratic Senate, Republican House, does the election break the gridlock?
I hope so. And I think there is a good chance that it will. There are a great many members of Congress and especially members of the Senate in both parties who understand that we have to solve this long-run debt problem. We have to do something like Simpson-Bowles. It isn't a question of, is this exactly the answer? Of course it isn't. But we have to do something like it, or Domenici-Rivlin. And they have the characteristic in common that they require tax reform that raises more revenue over time and entitlement reform slows the growth of entitlements, doesn't cut them, but slows their growth, especially the health care ones, and holds the rest of the budget pretty constant.
Alice Rivlin, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, who was President Clinton's budget director and sat on the Simpson-Bowles Debt Commission and voted yes. She also co-chaired her own bipartisan commission with former Republican Senator Pete Domenici. Thank you so much for this conversation.
You're very welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we will hear next from Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, who was on Simpson-Bowles and voted no, as we continue with Issue 8 in our 30 Issues in 30 Days presidential election series. Is Simpson-Bowles the answer to our national debt? Stay tuned.
$1 trillion deficits, they slow our economy, restrain employment, and cause wages to stall. To the majority of Americans who now believe that the future will not be better than the past, I can guarantee you this: if Barack Obama is reelected, you'll be right.
Mitt Romney from his convention speech. It's our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. See all 30 at WNYC.org/issues. We posted questions for all 30, so you can get the conversations going in advance of their radio days, WNYC.org/issues. And today it is Issue 8. Is Simpson-Bowles the answer? You know, we hear so much about Republicans opposing Simpson-Bowles because it has tax hikes. Well, many Democrats reject it, too. And one of the most important is with me now, Illinois Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who sat on the Simpson-Bowles Commission and voted no on its recommendations and released her own plan. Hi, Congresswoman. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Brian.
Would you start with the balance between military and domestic spending cuts in your plan versus Simpson-Bowles? We brought this up with Alice Rivlin, and she said the reason it isn't addressed as much, though she would like to see it addressed more, is that unlike Medicare, military spending, even under current projections, would not grow faster than the economy.
Well, I agreed with Simpson-Bowles in terms of the dollar figure, about $100 billion cut from the defense budget. I did it in a different way, though, because Simpson-Bowles took money from military families and from veterans, and I don't agree with that. But we have an agency, the Department of Defense, that can't even pass an audit. There are about $1 trillion worth of expenditures that can't actually be accounted for. I'm not saying all of those are wasted, but certainly we can make dramatic cuts in the defense budget without harming the national security of our country. And I give credit to Simpson-Bowles, and I did at the time, and I've done an analysis now of Simpson-Bowles. But I hope you'll let me. I had the advantage of hearing the end of the interview with Alice Rivlin, and I'm wondering if I could just take a moment to say a few things about it.
Absolutely. I'm curious.
Okay. One was Alice was mistaken. The Simpson-Bowles does limit federal spending without any regard to an aging population or other national needs, and it caps federal spending at 21% of GDP in 2035. Now it's looking down the road at the date, but it seems to me that the arbitrary cap, regardless of what the fiscal problems that we're facing or the aging of our population is a bad idea. That's one. The other thing, you had a clip from Paul Ryan, and I want to read a quote to you that truly did, you can see him say it, come from Paul Ryan in 2002 when he was arguing for the third Bush stimulus. Listen to this. Quote, We've got to get the engine of economic growth growing again, because we now know, because of the recession, we don't have the revenues that we wanted to. We don't have the revenues we need to fix Medicare, to fix Social Security. We've got to get Americans back to work. Then the surpluses come back. Then the jobs come back. I mean, it's an absolute Keynesian argument that Paul Ryan was making then, very different what he's making now.
I'm surprised to hear that, because the history of Paul Ryan that we usually hear is that he came out of this Ayn Rand influence as a very young man, and always believed ideologically in shrinking government to unleash the private economy.
Well, anybody can Google it. Take a look. He also says it's also helping. He says it's more than just giving someone an unemployment check. It's also helping those people with their health insurance while they've lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. So here's my main concern, that and the reason that I voted against Bo Simpson, and the reason I'm really sorry that now it has become a kind of shorthand in Washington for what a balanced and bipartisan deficit reduction deal would look like. And I think that conventional wisdom is wrong, that much of the burden comes from on the backs of middle class and those who aspire to it. And for all the talk in Simpson-Bowles about shared sacrifice, it's really the Americans who have already been sacrificing literally for decades, whose income has been flat, that are being asked to pay. And the other thing, pose the question as, in order to reduce the deficit, what revenue would you increase, and what programs would be cut? There is a third way, mm-hmm. and that is called growth. And that's what Paul Ryan was talking about in 2002, actually putting people back to work, putting money in their pockets because they have a job, getting them off of government programs where they really don't want to be. And so the American Jobs Act, which the president introduced, that would create up to 2 million jobs. The Republicans have absolutely sabotaged that kind of approach. Simpson-Bowles doesn't really offer that, except one thing: they offer a tax cut for middle-income people. So I just think that to pose the question in some ways between the Ryan budget, which is all about cuts, although it also gives that in domestic programs, but gives the revenue to the richest Americans in tax cuts, or Simpson-Bowles. That somewhere in between those lies the answer, and I disagree with that.
Alice Rivlin said where she disagrees with you on the big outline of how to close the deficit and reduce the debt is that Simpson-Bowles is mostly spending cuts with some tax hikes. And she says everybody's got to get the Republicans to agree to some tax hikes, but that yours is mostly tax hikes more than the spending cuts, and she thinks that's too much. Is your plan for deficit reduction mostly tax hikes?
Well, if you combine cutting loopholes with actually raising revenue, I would say that it is mostly that. And most Americans believe that the wealthiest people, and a lot of wealthy people do as well, because they have supported my legislation that would raise tax rates starting at $1 million up to $1 billion, and there are $1 billion earners in our country, and get some balance back in terms of revenue in our country. We are at the lowest revenue point and rich people are paying the lowest rate that they've paid in a very long time. And I think that is a way to go. But also, we should be cutting some of those what we call tax expenditures. And I'm not talking about middle-income people on their mortgage interest deduction, et cetera. I'm talking about the tax cuts that we give to the oil companies and to companies that outsource jobs. There's no reason to do that. And I raise about 30% of my plan comes from ending some of those tax expenditures. And it does include increasing revenue, and then cutting the defense budget and cutting non-defense. But I want to, you know, and this idea, the very idea that we need in this country to cut Medicare for our seniors, especially like on the Ryan budget, to give tax breaks to the wealthiest Americans, or that we ought to further raise the age in Social Security when actually low-income people are living shorter lives than they used to. Lost ground.
The Medicare thing is to cut an unsustainable rate of growth, isn't it?
Here's the deal. We, you know, the Republicans are advertising on television that the Democrats took over $700 billion out of Medicare. We didn't cut a single benefit. We made Medicare better for in terms of benefits, and we made it more efficient. We stopped subsidizing private insurance companies through the Medicare Advantage plans, which are still going great guns right now, the Medicare Advantage. They actually have more consumers, and they're charging less. The government's paying less.
I don't want to get too bogged down on this point, which we've debated a million times on the show. But actually, tell me very briefly your response to the most common pushback on the, you know, from serious people who criticize the way the Obama plan cuts Medicare. They say if this is going to come out of the providers' reimbursements, that a lot of doctors are just going to get out of Medicare, and then there's going to be a shortage of doctors because they don't make enough money staying in it. Give me like 30 seconds on why you think that wouldn't happen.
Well, first of all, that isn't true. The House of Representatives, the Democratic House, in the first 2 years, we voted to raise they fear a 27% cut in their reimbursements. That is simply not true. We took it out of waste, fraud, and abuse, beefing up the fraud division, and we took it out of the private insurance companies, and we could do more by allowing Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices. We could do a public option. All of these things would lower the cost of health care and still sufficiently reimburse doctors.
Okay. That's the answer. Last question.
Sure.
Would you prefer the so-called sequestration budget to Simpson-Bowles or a Simpson-Bowles-style compromise? If Congress doesn't find a new compromise by December, as you know, drastic new cuts will take effect that automatically will cut deeply into defense as well as various domestic programs. Is that better, in your opinion, than Simpson-Bowles?
No, it'll also throw our country into another recession. These kinds of cuts we absolutely can't sustain. But I refuse to say that we need to have a compromise. I totally agree with that. But Simpson-Bowles is not the template for that kind of compromise. I think we have to start from ground zero and look at the real question. Is whose economy are we talking about? Who are we interested in protecting? I think it's the middle class, those who aspire to it, and that's the approach that we need to take, starting from that.
Jan Schakowsky, Democratic Congresswoman from Illinois. She voted no on the Simpson-Bowles Deficit Commission recommendation. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's really been my pleasure. Thanks.
And that's it for Issue 8 in our 30 Issues in 30 Days presidential election series. Is Simpson-Bowles the answer to our national debt? Remember, folks, we have a 30-issue sentiment chart for today's topic. Go to wnyc.org/issues to pick a point on the graph for your opinion on how important the deficit is and how much you would cut spending or raise taxes to fix it. Again, it's another 30-issue sentiment chart. And if you've never heard of a sentiment chart, it's visual, it's interesting, it's easy, and it comes from our award-winning data graphics team. Pick a point on the graph for your opinion on how important the deficit is and how much you would cut spending or raise taxes to fix it at wnyc.org/issues. And our 30-issue series also includes some great articles you can read, handpicked by longform.org, which specializes in curating the best writing on the web. For this week's theme of debt and taxes, the articles include a profile by Adam Davidson of one of Mitt Romney's partners at Bain Capital, who is spending $1 million on Mitt's campaign, all at wnyc.org/issues. issues. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will play some excerpts from the speech at the UN that President Obama gave this morning addressing the anti-U.S. violence in some places around the world and other things. Also, Mitt Romney gave a competing address at the Clinton Global Initiative here in New York today. Stay with us.